There will be spoilers ahead. Lots of spoilers, so be careful, won't you?
Yee-haw, partners! Y'all are mighty welcome to our last roundup of this here series because Patton said so! And we've been jawing about movies recommended by our main cowpoke, Patton Black Angus Oswalt. And boy, howdy, ain't we got a peach to close out with? Because we're a wampin' and a wheelin' about 40 guns! That there moving picture from Mr. Sam Fuller, who knows him a thing or two about throwing together a film. Yes, sirree, Bob!
Yeehaw!
Woo-hah! Yippee-ki-yay! 10,000 thundered herd of cattle! West of the Pecos! Tumbleweeds! Lariats! Picante sauce! Saddle soap! Dang it, I'm plumb out of Western cliches, so I reckon I'll just say I'm your host, Max, the Hebrew hoss thief, Levine. And over yonder is the rootinest, tootinest, wearing zoot suitinest hombre, a man so mean he once nudged a man roughly just for snoring. Mike, extra bold loose. Give us a yeehaw, Mike.
Can we slap leather together?
Not now.
Yeehaw.
Excellent. We have now fulfilled the contractual obligations from the California Act of 1831 involving discussion of Western movies. There have to be at least two yeehaws, and we've each supplied one.
Whew. Glad that's over.
It's the law. Don't look it up. But before we get to looking that up, let's look up our poll question.
Poll question.
We asked you, are you happy? Really?
No, we didn't.
No, we didn't. But we should have because it matters to us. But we asked you, what is the most cheaply made movie that you have just come to love? Seth Jacobs leads off with what will be a rather popular one. Just says simply, Clerks, which was made for about a dollar.
That much,
Nick,
huh?
Nick Hoffman says, apparently he was a little uncertain in his typing. It's very well known that Monty Python and the Holy Grail was made for relative pennies and is easily one of my all-time favorites. Yours too, if I'm not mistaken. And yes, you're very much mistaken. Yes, it is. I also love John Carpenter's film school grad piece. I assume he means grad school film piece. Mm. Dark Star.
Ah.
And George Lucas's THX1138.
I think it's THX.
Nope, it's Thux. Charles Forsythe says, Clerks, another vote for Clerks. I think a lot of people came to love it, as Kevin Smith connects nearly all his movies back to it. That's probably true. A shout-out to Blair Witch Project, which took all of its potential weaknesses and turned them into strengths. It never became a favorite, but it was a triumph of low-budget film. Yeah, that was like, what, $100,000, $75,000? I think the genius of that film has been diluted by the tsunami of lame found footage movies that followed, not to mention the abysmal cash grab sequel and the third one. There were three of them. Current context, nobody cares. It doesn't look particularly interesting, but it was a big deal when it came out. Yeah, that movie scared the crap out of me, I won't lie. Joey Nelson just posted a picture of the poster for Tremors. That was a low budget, and that's a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun. Fred Ward? No, Willard.
Yes, Fred Ward and Kevin and the Bacon. Six-degree man himself, Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, it was fun.
Benjamin Schleiss says, Escanaba in the Moonlight.
That is correct.
That's the title. He's not making fun.
No, as I am currently in Michigan, I can't tell you how popular that movie was here because it was, but I think it might be the only of the 54 states in which it was popular.
54?
Oh, right, 55. Okay. Yeah, I forgot.
Dave! I suppose it's hard to beat the budget for The Harder They Come. Even if one adjusts the budget for inflation, which would be difficult to do, the budget being apparently $400,000 in 1972 Jamaican dollars.
Oh.
As I understand it, Jamaica has averaged 13% inflation a year for the last 60 years.
Oh, dear.
Oh, my God. So in today's Jamaican dollars, that would be what, $70 billion?
Yikes.
Good Lord. Anyway, it was a staple in Harvard Square for decades. Yes, it was.
Hmm.
Great soundtrack, and I love that it's in English with subtitles.
Mm.
Gritty story. I would be remiss if I didn't mention Darkstar. Yes, another for Darkstar, which I don't exactly love, but between the Tucson, Arizona, I thought it was Benson, Arizona. Okay, it's been a long time since I've seen it.
Yeah.
But I know the song, and the beach ball, which I thought was cute, so did Pinback, it is pretty special. By the way, he is not Pinback.
Neither am I.
On the Japan side, I think the cookie cutter movies of the 60s and 70s were made on around $600,000 a movie. Lots of scenes that have inexpensive sets. Red Peony Gambler is a standout. I wonder what they spent on the set for the opening scene photograph below, which I'm holding up now.
See that? Mm-hmm.
They borrowed a rowboat for this scene, and they are relying on handsome Takakura Ken, along with the beautiful Fuji Junko, who is not afraid to show her neck, to keep audience attention.
Shocking.
They also used lighting to minimize the importance of the set.
Hmm. Huh. Neat.
Red Peony Gambler. Okay.
Hmm.
George Saulnier says, I don't really care or think about film budgets. Ooh, aren't we grand? Most of my favorite films are likely low-budget ones. The qualities I enjoy most about films really don't require much money. I'm not sure I even know the budget of my favorites. I find big budgets tend to result in mediocre films because they have to shoot for the lowest common denominator so they don't lose the investment.
He means me.
You are the lowest common denominator in so many fields.
I'm still taller than you.
That's only because you're a freakish gargantuan mutant.
6'2".
Exactly, you poor bastard. How do you live in this world?
Max is 4'11".
Yeah. And a half. In heels. Regan McStravick says, I have no idea what the actual budget was, but Dave made a maze. Oh, good for you, Dave. Bet this is another Dave.
I think it's
seems
a film.
Like it was done for somewhere between $100 and maybe a few thousand dollars.
Wow.
Of course, that largely depends on whether or not and how much the crew was paid. The set, which is kind of brilliant, may have been made for nothing, with a few trips to the recycle yard.
Oh dear.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know what this. Tyler Stewart brings up El Mariachi. Yes.
Oh yeah.
The first in the trilogy from Robert Rodriguez, and pie. I like pie, too. I like pecan pie.
Yeah. Was that Aronofsky?
I cannot remember. Yeah, but it was made for like $1.
Yeah, it was an interesting film, yeah.
Mike Dance, another vote for Clerks. Adam Mark, in an uncharacteristically brief post, says, Blair Witch Project, it was made for $750,000. Iconic, memorable, and scary. It's a necessary staple of horror.
I agree.
Yeah, absolutely. Val Coons, queen and all-around empress of Q Footsteps.
Of what?
Praise Q Footsteps, the second-best podcast in known space.
No.
Said, I gave this question a lot of thought, and I came up with three. Oh, God.
that wasn't a low-budget film. George Burns, come on.
Yeah, he's in that, you know, Birdemic.
Wait, no.
Budget $10,000.
That much?
Wow, I'm stunned.
Rod must have cost at least $50.
Fungicide.
No.
Budget $140. Oh, come on. It's science crazed.
Oh, there's no
really,
budget.
Really, Val? She's messing with us.
She has to be.
No budget provided. Yeah, or used. You never said they had to be good. We said you had to love them. And all three of these have been such a treasure trove of quotes from and about them, and it's your fault. Okay, we'll take the blame for that.
No, she means you.
Yeah, fine. I'll take the heat for that.
All right.
Stephen the assistant says Clerks. Okay. Mm-hmm. And Feeders 2? Really? Yep. I got him hooked on Riff Tracks.
So, wait, not Feeders 1, but specifically Feeders 2.
No, the sequel apparently is better. Yeah.
Okay, sure. I wouldn't argue. It's not worth it.
It really isn't. But what about you, Mike? What's your favorite cheaply made but lovable film?
I'm going to have to go with Deep House. No.
Hey, that was $1 million. That was way above any of these but guys.
But not at the time. That was not a lot of money. Considering what honestly, the production value for that film is really high. It's
that
just
is true.
The story is really dull.
It looks surprisingly good, especially
well, they built
for that
the entire
kind of
house underwater and shot that. So, Clerks. I really do like Clerks, and that one I saw in the theater, and it's like, oh, this is what happens when you shoot low light 16mm and blow it up to 35. Whoo! It's like a snowstorm the whole film. But let's face it really launched that career for Kevin Smith. So But two that I really like, one of them's called Cube, and I don't think it gets a lot of press.
Oh, I've heard of that.
But it was a really neat science fiction film about people that wake up and find out they're caught in this maze. Now, if you're claustrophobic, don't watch this film because it basically takes place in one room. They make like they're going to different rooms, but it's the same room. And then Primer, say our entire episode on Primer. Yep. Primer was a really clever film. The acting, while not outstanding, was totally solid and believable, and it was a really neat take on time travel, a subject that we generally can't stand. So those I think for me are standouts for, and of course, you know, old trash like anything from Roger Corman in the 1950s or good our old friend Ed Wood, you know, those have soft spots in my hearts. But for films that I think they're actually decent, Primer, Cube, and certainly Clerks. But what about you?
Oddly enough, you covered mine. My first one was Primer.
Yeah.
You know, that was a budget of $7,000.
Man, do they get a lot for that film.
They get every dime's worth and more.
It was episode 156, but go back and listen if you don't know anything about Primer. It was a surprisingly intelligent time travel film made for nothing.
Yeah. And that, and again, I also have Clerks.
Yeah.
That was made for nothing, and yeah, those are the ones for me, but... Thank you. These were some great ones, except for you, Val.
he says, knowing it was entirely his fault, nothing to do with me. I didn't help pay for her subscription to Riff Tracks or...
Right, and you didn't get her a copy of Science Crazed.
Actually, to be fair, I didn't. She bought it herself. I warned her not to, but... Hey, and if you've never heard of Science Crazed, good for you.
Yes.
Currently possibly the worst film I've ever seen.
It's a serious contender for the worst.
Yeah.
But we would like your answers to a different question that does not have to do with the worst.
Oh, good.
In honor of this week's movie, if you like Westerns, and I know some people don't, what's your favorite Western? Or do you just dislike the whole genre?
Yes.
We already know Mike's answer.
No.
So, and at the end of the show, we will tell you the secret code for answering.
There's no code. You email us or go to Facebook, but...
You fool! You've given it away! You have to go shave your head, get plastic surgery, and move to Argentina.
Argentina? Galimardo? But now we should get back to 40 Guns, oughtn't we?
I suppose we ought. So let's get to some stuff about it. The facts. Budget, $300,000.
Yeah.
Gross... I have not been able to find it.
Really?
The closest I got, and this can't be right, was $6,000, which means it would have completely tanked, and I don't think even a Barbara Stanwyck movie would have done that.
Huh.
So, no idea. I couldn't find anything anywhere.
That's really weird.
Yeah.
Hmm.
The working title of the movie was Woman with a Whip, which I think she has in one scene.
And one song, but we'll get to that. Yeah.
There's a sequence where Jessica Drummond, Barbara Stanwyck's character, falls off her horse, gets her foot caught in the stirrup, and is dragged by the horse.
Yes, there is.
The stunt woman, who refused to do the stunt, she said it was too dangerous. So without hesitation, Barbara Stanwyck did the stunt herself.
Oh my God!
She was 49 at this point, by the way. She was not a spring chicken. She got some bruises and some scrapes, but she was fine.
You know what?
That's
good for her.
That's a friggin' pro.
Yeah.
That is a professional right there.
And we will be coming back to Barbara Stanwyck. Oh, yes.
Yes, we will. For an early scene, Sam Fuller, who is the director, we'll get to him too, wanted one continuous shot along the entire length of the frontier town's main street, which, brace yourself, is on Fox's back lot, not a real frontier town. which had been used in hundreds of westerns. You've seen this street so many times. Various techniques were tried, including a camera mounted on a crane driving down the street, but Fuller didn't like the results. Eventually, he had 50 workmen build 1,000 feet of track to get the desired effect in one take. It is still the longest dolly shot in the studio's history.
Wow.
Yeah.
Neat.
Although there's an on-screen credit for Eve Brent that...
was she the, honestly, like, introducing? Wasn't she the introducing yes, one?
She's done. She had already done a bunch of movies before this. I don't know why they put that in.
Oh.
She's the gunsmith.
Oh.
This was apparently condemned in the U.S. because of its brutal handling of the narrative, but praised in Europe for its stylistic vigor.
Brutal handling?
Yay. There's a lot of violence in it.
Is
you gotta remember, this is 1957, McCarthyism, people blaming movies, comic books, everything for juvenile delinquency. Yeah.
I mean, let me think. What is it, 3 people die in it? Four?
But a lot of windows get broken.
We'll get back to that, too.
Now, this movie claims to be, and if you think about it, it makes some sense, inspired by the events of Tombstone with Wyatt Earp.
Yeah, kind of.
Kind of, you know, yeah, Jessica Drummond is kind of a female version of Ike Clanton.
Kind of.
You know, but without the annoying Walter Brennan giggle.
They mention Tombstone in the movie? I think they do.
They do. They do mention it. Barbara Stanwyck, by the way, had played another character named Jessica Drummond in 1946 in My Reputation.
Which I mean, think is the great-grandmother of Phil Drummond from Different Strokes.
Yes, yes. Actually, no. She's the great-grandmother of Bulldog Drummond, the famous literary detective. Yeah. Now, there's a famed critic, Jonathan Rosenbaum, who hailed this movie as probably the best and craziest of Fuller's Western.
Huh.
The feature that fully announces his talent as an avant-garde filmmaker, even in this unlikeliest of genres. If you've ever wondered why Godard and other French New Wave directors deify Fuller, this movie explains it.
Huh.
Yeah, Richard Brody also championed the film, writing that Fuller, quote, Fuller's hard-boiled 1957 Western serves up doomed love and sudden death with dramatic richness. In Fuller's progressive view, the closing frontier made the hired gun obsolete. Despite the poetic bursts of violence in Fuller's signature shock images, the hero knows that the land will soon belong to the sedate townsfolk on whose behalf he honorably plies his loathsome trade.
Loathsome.
Loathsome. There were a lot of people who claim Sam Fuller as an influence. Luc Moulet, one of the big French New Wave directors, also Scorsese, and allegedly Jim Jarmusch and Quentin Tarantino consider him very influential.
Really?
Yep.
Huh.
He also, you know, Sam Fuller was also an actor and a writer.
And a maker of brushes.
Mm-hmm. Used to hang around with a lot of younger film directors, if you know what I mean.
No.
And I didn't know him as a Western director. I'd seen one other movie that he had done called The Big Red One.
Nope.
About a World War II movie, which has the distinction of starring both Lee Marvin and Mark Hamill.
Oh.
Yeah.
But it must much later on.
Yeah.
The Big Red One, what?
The Big Red One was what they called the First Army in World War II. The emblem that they wore was a large red numeral one on their uniforms.
Oh, that huh? Oh, well. I believe you.
Mm-hmm. That's really all I found. There's a lot more about Fuller himself.
Hmm.
But
anything that popped out that was interesting, or
no, I mean, no, he was he did a lot of very macho-ish movies. He did a lot of war films. He did a lot of westerns. I mean, a lot of westerns. The cast in this is a who's who of bit players from westerns and a lot of stuntmen. The guy who plays Charlie Savage, who I think has one line. He's not an actor. He's mostly a stuntman. He did some acting, and he was famously known as a stunt double for John Wayne.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he looks just like, huh?
From the back with a hat. I don't know.
12 gallons.
Mm.
That's a big hat.
Yep. Who's that guy with the big hat?
Well, so I guess we're down to the plot then.
Yep.
Cowpoke.
Well, it's the Old West in Namelessville, Western Land, a town dominated by the beautiful, ruthless, and tough-as-nails Jessica Drummond and her gang of 40 thieves, cowboys. But into town comes legendary gunfighter Griff Bunnell and his two rather Earp-like brothers, Wes and Chico.
Earp.
Chico?
Yes. I know.
Apparently, they left Gummo and Harpo back east. They aim to clean up this one-horse town, and thank goodness it is a one-horse town. Or rather, they plan to leave right away and head to California. Huh. Okay. But Griff gets drawn into some shenanigans with Jessica's brother, Brocky, who just wants... Unfortunately, my jokes, I thought his name was Rocky, no, so I had a lot of jokes based on Rocky, so I'm going to have to skip those. But then he gets drawn into some shenanigans with Jessica herself. Brothers get shot, sheriffs get hanged, and there's going to be a showdown, by cracky, you know the drill.
Hmm. Pew pew, yep. I guess.
Pow pow. Oh, and there's a tornado.
That's about the size of that.
Yeah.
The film.
Do you want to start off with what Patton says about this? Or do you want to save that for the end?
The way I was doing it, I was having him sort of chime in at the end to be like a tiebreaker. We'll do that. Okay.
Okay.
We can start with the acting, because there's at least one person worth talking about.
Yeah, we got to talk about that. Barbara Stanwyck is amazing in this.
But oh, my
Barbara
God.
Barbara Stanwyck is friggin' amazing always.
She just, like, I mean, talk about a tornado. She literally, like, the opening of the film has her. The problem is it's very confusing. I couldn't tell, are they chasing her?
No idea.
Is she bad or whatever? Because we see the three brothers on their buckboard. They're kind of coming up the old dusty trail. And coming towards them is this woman in pants. The last time we'll see her in pants, which I'm going to come back to.
No, she wears them a couple of times.
We'll come back to that.
But it's this whole black outfit. It looks like Bette Masterson.
And they're singing Woman with a Whip, which is one of two songs that should be removed from the film. Oh, that's right. There's only two songs in the film. That's a clue.
Yes. And yes, she's sung by the talented Jid. What the hell is his name?
Jidge Carroll.
Yeah. Ah, yes, we all remember Jidge Carroll.
Yeah, it's.
But yes,
so she's. We think is being chased by these people, and she comes towards the buckboard, goes around it. The guys in the buckboard go, oh, you don't see that every day. Then the 40 guns, the dragoons, as she calls them, come after them, and they part around, and it's freaking out their horses, which is understandable, and they go after them, and the three guys in the buckboard just sort of turn and watch them going like, huh, well, what do you think about that? Well, the credits are over there, so we should keep going.
There's something you don't see every day, Edgar.
What's that, Chauncey? Her initial appearance, I didn't understand at all. And it takes a while for us to find out what's actually going on. But
it's very visually striking, though, because there she is all in black.
Yeah.
She's riding the only white horse.
It's a little Lash LaRue, but...
It's a little, but it looks very cool. And she's being followed by an army.
Yeah.
And it turns out it's her army. But yes, when she walks into the room... She just dominates it. Everyone else just kind of fades into the background.
Well, her brother, Brocky,
Brocky
for reasons nobody understands, played by the amazing John Erickson. He's fine, whatever.
Yeah.
He starts off the film as the rootinest, tootinest hombre ever to punch a cow. It's literally,
varmint critter.
And they shoot up the town, and everybody's like, oh, just no, what shall we do? And poor Griff, we'll get to in a second, steps in and basically knocks him out, just literally walks up to him and smacks him with the gun, which is kind of cool because you can tell that Brocky is actually scared of him, as he should be. And he gets arrested. Well, it turns out Brocky is the brother of Jessica Drummond, Barbara Stanwyck's character. So the next thing when we see her is she literally storms into the jail, goes to the cell, unlocks it, takes her brother out, and just leaves.
Yeah. At the same time, the sheriff, who works for her, clearly, is doing this unbelievably fast reading of the charges, saying, now, clearly the gentleman was doing it in self-defense. You fine $50 for disturbing the peace. And she's taken him out by the time he's finished reading it.
Yeah. So her entrance is, I'm going to say pretty much gold standard Barbara Stanwyck. Mm. And in many ways, she really does kind of ride off with this film.
She really does. Because, I am sorry, it's not like they're bad actors. Okay, it's not like most of them are bad actors. Okay, it's not like some of them are bad actors. But there are some that are bad actors. I'm sorry, the guy who gets shot, John, the marshal in the beginning.
Okay.
He's terrible.
I guess. Oh, the guy who's like going blind?
Which is actually a very sad character.
It is very sad. The reason that I'll give him a pass is, and this is one of my earliest notes, is the dubbing is terrible.
Yeah.
And a lot of times when you do ADR or when you do looping, it loses a lot of the original performance, and it certainly loses the atmosphere of wherever they shot this thing. Mm. And there's a lot of dubbing in this film, and it's terrible. Now, does that in any way excuse his performance? Probably not. Mm. But yeah,
he's on screen for like 5 minutes and then he's dead.
Right. Brocky, played by John Erickson. I think he probably saw a couple of James Dean movies.
Yeah. You're tearing me apart?
I didn't think he was bad. I just thought he was hamming it up.
He's a little over the top, but honestly, the character kind of calls for that. He's clearly this spoiled... You know, his sister gets him out of everything.
Well,
he's very immature.
I had a different take on that. Mm-hmm. Do you want to go through the acting first, or do you want
to? Yeah, let's go through the acting.
So he's honestly, I'm going to put him in the category of fine.
Yeah, he's decent. He's certainly not embarrassing. How about Barry Sullivan as Griff? You know, our hard-boiled gunfighter.
Well, here's the main problem: Barry Sullivan and Gene Barry don't look all that dissimilar, and there's often scenes where I don't know which one is which.
Gene Barry plays his brother Wes.
Yeah, and which Gene is Barry, good I've casting. Seen. Well, Gene Barry I've seen before because he's from War of the Worlds, right? So he's He and Barry Sullivan look enough alike that I can't tell one from the other, and also I couldn't tell if his name was Griff or Cliff. It wasn't until I started looking at the cast list, it's like, oh, it is actually Griff. And like Max had the problem with Rocky and Brocky, so, you know, because who would call
him Brocky? By the way, you were right. Gene Barry was in War of the Worlds, and he was, in fact, Dr. Clayton Forrester.
Yep. Yeah, he's very tall. Barry Sullivan is, I'm going to go with fine. I think part of it is actually the writing, and we're going to come back to the writing. I think he's fine.
I think he does a good job. He's really good at the quiet menace. The sequence where he's doing the walk toward Rocky.
You mean the science-crazed portion of the film?
No, where he's doing the stalk up the street.
Well, you only see his feet.
Yeah, but that's enough. I really like the fact that one of the guys turns and goes, there's only one man who walks that way. Although when he says it, I'm like... What, you mean one foot in front of the other? Yeah. I'm pretty sure other people do that.
I didn't find his walk particularly interesting, but whatever.
But the presence he has is pretty impressive, and all of the gunslingers just turn and run. Because they recognize him, they know he's Griff Bunnell, they know he's an absolute badass.
Yeah.
And only Rocky is dumb enough to try to stand up to him.
Brocky. I guess it's short for broccoli. I don't know. We have Gene Barry, whose part is not that huge, and he's fine. He instantly falls in love with the gunsmith, who is a woman. And I got to say, for a Western, the women in this film are actually pretty cool. They're generally pretty surprising. Tough. She basically shows up and she's like, I'm going to have you. And Wes is like, well, I don't know. And she's like, nope, I'm going to have you. And that's pretty much it.
And apart from like a couple of sort of teasing comments, no one seems to think it's at all odd that the town gunsmith is a woman.
No.
Gunsmith is a very macho position to be in, especially in a Western movie.
Yeah.
Because the guns are such a masculine symbol.
Because you, well, you know.
Yes.
They're big and they go blam, blam.
Yes, yes. That's long and hard and fit in your pants.
Go slap leather and come back.
Eve Brent, I think, does a really nice job as Lavinia. She's
and there's really only two women characters in this film, really.
Yeah.
And they're both not typical. And it's that's very refreshing. So there's apparently some woman named Rio, but I really don't remember her at all.
She's the one who's rolling around on the ground with Brocky at some point, and she just obviously he's gotten her pregnant or some such, and she went to his sister, and he's mad about that.
Well, and I got to give her credit too, because Brocky's like, "You're not going to go to my sister. I want you to go into town and say that nothing ever happened." And she's like, "I'm not going to badmouth your sister." Slap. Yes, you are. No, I'm not. Slap. Yes, you are. No, I'm not.
She's like, "She's good to me. She's my friend. I'm not going to do that." And she does not back down, even when he's like threatening to kill her.
Yeah. So
yeah, Brocky's a real piece of work.
Well, and we'll get back to his character. There's a bunch of other actors in this. Dean Jagger, we've seen in tons of different things. He plays the sheriff. He is, talk about a character actor, bit player. I would not be surprised to find out he's got 100 film credits to his name. Other people, though, Robert Dix plays Chico, who he's there.
133.
See? Yeah. Robert Dix is Chico Bunnell, the kid, who I think is probably close to 30, but whatever.
Yeah, well.
He's the little brother that, oh gosh, I want to be a gunslinger too.
This was an interesting thing in it, because honestly, when after about half an hour in this movie, I'm like, oh, Chico's dead.
Me too. I had the same note, and it turns out he wasn't the one who dies.
No. So,
yeah.
No, that was a surprise.
Yeah. Otherwise, I think we have, and the rest, really.
Yeah.
They have names, but nobody really stood out. It might have been nice if some of the characters, honestly, looked different from each other, but a lot of them look very similar. So sometimes it's like, is that Brocky or is that Howard Swain? Is that, I don't know.
I do want to get back a little bit to Dean Jagger. I think he does a pretty good job with the sheriff, because the sheriff's a little more complicated than just the, oh, you think, I'm just the corrupt, cowardly sheriff. It's like, no, as it turns out, he's like insanely in love with Jessica.
It's
believable.
It
is. Because obviously he's drawn to her strength, because he's weak and she's incredibly strong.
It's also plainly obvious that there is no way that she would ever feel for him the same way that he feels for her.
She can tolerate him, basically.
And there is a moment where basically Griff shows up to talk to her about, I got to take one of your guys away because he killed somebody and blah, I have a warrant. And they sit down and he has 3 double whiskeys in the space of about 3 minutes.
Yep,
and
I'm chug, like, chug.
Griff is not getting back all the way to the bunkhouse. But there's this interesting scene that sort of starts things, but there's an interesting scene later on where Jessica basically says, you know, I could fall for a guy like you. I need somebody that's strong and can take orders. And it's like, you don't realize either that's not going to work.
Yeah.
Because as strong as Griff is, and much he obviously does respect her, that's not going to work. And I want to come back to that, because obviously the film thinks otherwise. But yeah, the acting ranges from a couple of standouts to, it's fine.
Tolerable. Yeah.
We start off at CinemaScope. We should mention our old friend CinemaScope, which doesn't pop up very often. That means it's really, really wide.
Yeah. My first thought, one of my first notes is, wow, this guy really wants to be John Ford. Because he starts with a... But I'll tell you something. No, he doesn't. Because Ford is legendary for his great sweeping shots.
Yeah.
In his movies, the landscape is a character.
Yeah.
It's part of it. Fuller, it does a lot more close-ups, a lot more two-shots. He's way more into the characters and into the people, which I think is kind of interesting. It's like, I was wrong. He is not trying to be John Ford.
Until suddenly there's a tornado.
Well, you got to remember, I mean, we've both lived in the Midwest. They come out of nowhere.
I know. It just is like, hey, what's that on the horizon? I think it's a plot point. I think it's coming this way. Although, to be fair, the first plot point in this film is, in fact, a bath.
Yes. What? Yeah, there's a surprising number of scenes of men bathing. There's kind of a lot of that.
The film starts with it and ends with it, basically, because it's a wedding scene. But yeah, there's this sudden tornado, and yes, okay, I get it. It just sort of felt like we need something to push these two characters together. I know, a tornado.
Honestly, that kind of works for me, because the idea is there's what it takes is the force of nature. It takes an act of God, because they're both such powerful characters. They're supposed to be such strong people.
Yep.
that to push them together, it takes something like a tornado.
And I will say that the scene of them sort of like hunkering down, and I was very mm-hmm. pleased they did not go in the shed, because it's like, no, yeah. going inside is
You're
not good.
You're going to die.
Go, yeah. stay low to the wall, and that's exactly what they do.
Yep, yep.
The scene after where they're sort of like, well, that was sucky, let's talk a little while, and we actually learn a little bit more about the characters.
Mm-hmm.
We see a softness to Jessica that I will come back to. We're going to come back to a lot of stuff. But we found out a lot about her, and this is where we actually learned, oh, there is a story in this movie. Oh, okay, cool. And I, you know, now that you put it that way, that it takes a force of nature to get these two people together, yeah, it just feels very out of nowhere, which I guess they are, but it just, for story-wise, it's like, well, here we are in the, holy crap, look at that. I don't know. It was a little sudden.
It's a little sudden. Yeah. Yeah, but a lot of stuff is very sudden in this movie. A lot of things come out of nowhere.
Yeah. With the opening shootout we have, which is the rootinous, tootinous hombre ever to punch a cow scene, this is Brocky and his close buddies who are, I don't know, Fred and Jeff, who cares? They shoot the crap out of the town, which heals itself awfully fast, like the
They
next
have a
scene.
Very large supply of extra windows. I mean, you had to in the Old West, because those are the first things that get broken, not just by the guy shooting, but anytime there's going to be fighting on the streets, somebody's got to knock the glass out of the window with their gun, despite the fact the window right next to them is already broken.
Well, and the best part is that the windows that have painted signs on them, well, they had extras of those too, just in
Well,
case.
Like I say, these people are very well prepared.
It was a little, yeah, okay, yeah.
That's all right. I do like that initial, the gunfight, because it isn't a gunfight. Griff just walks up, and Rocky is so intimidated by him that he can walk up and just pistol whips him. He doesn't shoot him.
Well, it's a little heavy-handed director-wise, because what do? We go right to Griff's eyes, and we're looking at Griff's mm-hmm. eyes, and we're looking at the steely glance that is taking down. But the thing is I kind of wish if they're going to do that, or I should say Sam Fuller was going to do that, I'd kind of like to have seen Brocky's face a little closer, because we still pretty much see him as a full figure, and it's like, if you're going to hit us over the head, hit us over the head.
His fear, it's not as readily apparent, but it's actually shown a little more subtly. We keep seeing close-up of his gun hand.
Yeah.
And if you look, his hand's shaking.
Yeah.
Not violently. Just there's a tremor.
Yeah.
He is scared. He's just better at hiding it.
I like the idea. I just don't think the execution was, for me, was there, fully there.
Okay.
Hey, did you notice where Jess lives?
In
a big valley. She does. She totally does.
Oh, dear. Yes, yes.
For those who don't
know. TV show Barbara Stanwyck, yes.
I couldn't help it when they show that far shot of the house and it's in this big valley. It's like, oh, that makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah,
but then
when
Griff goes out there, because he's got his paper, his actual government paper that's like, hey, one of your guys killed a deputy somewhere.
That's why, well, not just killed a deputy, but he stole the mail.
Right. Well, we find out finally, once and for all, who run Bartertown?
Yeah.
Because it turns out Jess is kind of basically a Republican. She's decided, I'm going to sweep in and use my money to influence people to have the government run the way I want to. And here's where things get complex and kind of interesting. On one hand, I mean, she's just short of a dictator, right?
Yeah.
But on the other hand, she's actually trying to do some good for the town.
And she appears to be very fair and very even-handed.
Except when it comes to her brother.
But you can understand that people are irrational about family. That makes her human. And yes, she cuts him way too much slack.
Well, and
but like the other, with the others, when like, what's his name? Stain. Like, you rob
Swain.
Yeah, how's that? Yeah, I think Stain works better. And Savage.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, you guys broke the law. Yeah, you're going down. No, I'm not going to save you. You guys screwed up big time.
Well, here's my question. If it was somebody else coming for those guys, if it wasn't Griff, would she have been so accommodating?
That's the thing. Maybe not.
No, I don't think so.
But part of it, I mean, it's a remarkable scene when he comes in to serve the warrant.
Yep.
And all 40 of the guys are at the dinner table. And my thought is, my God, that's a big-ass table.
Yeah.
That's like a bunkhouse table.
Well, she has to be a cattle rancher, because otherwise, how could she feed them?
Seriously, it's like, all right, get another cow in for tonight.
Yeah.
And he walks in alone,
mm-hmm.
and he knows that he's outnumbered 40-1, and he just says, "Hi, yeah, I'm here to arrest one of your men here." And they pass the warrant up the table.
Yeah, so that they all can take a look at it.
Yeah, because I'm betting half of them can't read. Nope, he doesn't flinch. He never looks nervous. He looks like he's trying not to smirk.
Well, and it's so weird because he's literally coming from no position of power at all. Mm-hmm. The only thing mm-hmm. you could say is, oh, he's a governmentally deputized something of the law, I guess. Mm-hmm. Which we don't even know when he comes into town. All we know is he's coming into town for business.
No, he's got a federal warrant, and that's the thing. Jessica isn't an idiot. She knows, hell, there's something bigger than Phil out there.
Right. Well, and she's got her finger in those various pies. That's the whole thing. Mm-hmm. She's spreading her money around.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, the whole, you know, I pointed out her being just short of a dictator. And maybe that's why the people in town don't react much when it gets shot up, because they don't. It's not even like, gosh, I wish we could do something about that horrible Jessica Drummond, or I've had it with this Brocky guy. It's literally like, oh, that's annoying.
Well, come on, let's get the other breakables off the street, pull up the shutters, they're at it again.
Yeah, and that I thought was a little weird. Like, I wish there had been something there to, like, better underline her relationship with the town, but eh.
Well, as Gene Wilder says, you have to remember, these are simple farmers, people of the land, the common clay, you know, morons.
But that's the thing, is that the few people we meet, like the gunsmith and whoever the guy is that works with her, I don't know if it's her husband or her father or whatever.
I think it's her father.
Don't seem stupid.
No, and neither does the guy who runs the bathhouse or does all the damn singing.
Yeah, I guess. It's just, you can't, it looks like, because once we get to the Alibaba part and the 40 thieves who are sitting at the table, and we find out that it's like, oh, well, there's the sheriff. The marshal was not on the plan there. That's why he got killed. But there's the sheriff, there's the judge, there's, you know, blah, 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 blah. Anybody who's got any power in town, it's because of her, or she's paid them off or whatever. In fact, she even offers Griff a job, and it's like, you'll get a lot more doing this than you will doing what you are now.
And I like one of her lines to him when she's saying how, you know, there's no room for you gunfighters anymore. It's a line I really like. You don't want the only evidence of your life's work to be bullet holes in men.
Yeah.
Like, damn.
Yeah. I wish we'd had evidence of that, though, because it seems like the gunfighters seem to do pretty well in this film. I mean, Brocky gets to shoot his mouth off, literally, and we have Griff come in and he takes care of things with guns. Like, we hear about, oh, things are now moving to government. There's a lot more
show don't tell about that. Yeah.
Oh, the other way around. Tell don't show. Yeah.
Tell don't show. Yeah.
Yeah. And well, all right. So we keep saying we'll get back to this. Let's get to this. There's some character stuff in here that I think is thought about when the script was written, but isn't really fully fleshed out. To
how
me.
Do you mean?
Well, so Brocky. Brocky is actually, or could have been, 57, a very nuanced, complex character. Because we find out that what happened was her dad died right before, I guess, or no, he died a little after Brocky was born. But as her mother, she was born, and we're going to guess she's probably 10 years older than Brocky.
Probably.
Maybe more, because she said she was 49 when she did this. Yeah. Cripes. And her mother, she was alone with her mother in that shed when her mother was going into labor. She delivered Brocky and her mom died. On one hand, right now, we've got the kid who might have it in his head that he was the cause of his mother's death, because technically he was, right? So he's got that on his shoulders. Two, he's the younger child and he's the boy, and who's in charge? His older sister.
Yeah, and that's got to,
I think she actually does say she's 12 at that point, so that she's 12 years older than he is. Although, you know, obviously she's a lot older than that. So we've got that on one hand. On the other hand, let's face it, as far as strength of character and spine goes, there's no contest.
Yeah. I mean, there is a certain amount of emasculation here.
Yeah.
Because what does she do when he gets out in front of all the men? She says, give me your guns.
Yep.
She takes his guns away, and you know what that means to men.
Yeah.
And he does it. He does. He hesitates, but he does it. He just doesn't even think not to. Here you go.
Well, the funny thing is, we never see her shoot anything.
Nope. So, she doesn't even seem to carry a gun.
No.
She doesn't have to.
Well, she has the whip. So, kitten with a whip. So
yeah, she doesn't need a gun. She just looks at people.
So he
people do things for her, even when they know what she wants them to do. She doesn't even have to say it in some cases.
Well, and let's face it, if you had met Barbara Stanwyck, you'd probably do anything she said too, right?
Hell yes.
There's people like that. Like the one time I met Tommy Lee Jones, he came into the store I was working in. There is just a presence about that man where why you maybe not call anybody else sir. You know, that's a tradition that's gone away, but something about Tommy Lee Jones just said, you call him sir. And it's something with Barbara Stanwyck is like, she says something, you listen. And she's not even E.F. Hutton. So Brocky shoots off his mouth and his guns at every chance to both challenge his sister's power, to try to prove his strength in the eyes of others. But we don't really get into that, which is a shame, because I think it's a really interesting potential part of that character. Mostly he just comes off as an asshole. We know why. We hear her side of it. It's like, look, I delivered him. I literally delivered him, and I've been his mother. Because my mother died, and I was left because my father died, and soon after that, I had the ranch to run by myself, did very well with it. He's kind of her son brother, right? Because
kind of, yeah. She's in effect become the father figure.
And she's clawed her way up against the elements and happenstance to basically control everything around her after growing up feeling she has no control over anything, right? So that part, I like that. I just don't think that Brocky, like they dealt much enough with Brocky. And then Griff comes into town and she suddenly falls for him. And there's just, it feels very sudden. It's not like... She really is witnessed. It's a movie.
People fall in love much faster in movies.
I know, but once he shows up, that's when the dress comes on, and that kind of bothered me. Because she gets a lot more girly after that part, and it's like, why are we bending her character? Especially when she has dialogue that basically says, you know what, I could go for a guy like you who could take orders and could stand up and actually have the strength to fill them out, and it's like, that's not what Griff thought you were going to say.
Yeah,
not what I thought she was going to say. It just didn't feel consistent, and there's a bending of her character, especially at the end. She controls the whole town, right?
Yeah.
And we don't, as I said earlier, we don't really know how they feel about her. We never talk about that. But it comes to a point, and there's a shootout at the end, because, of course, Brocky goes nuts, which is fine. It's inevitable. Yeah. I expected that. I didn't expect it to work the way it did.
Yeah, he takes his sister hostage.
Yeah. Finally he's had enough. That's it.
Yeah, he's broken.
And he's like got a gun to her, and there's Griff, because he actually had also just had somebody shoot Wes, Griff's brother, literally after saying I do and right before the kiss, which is horrible.
He shoots Wes on his wedding day.
And there's a shooter. So there's Griff, and he's like, there's Brocky going, what are you going to do, shoot her? And I have to admit, I was amazed. That's exactly what he did.
He does. Griff shoots Jessica. But as they say, because he's so good, he knows exactly how to shoot her non-lethally.
Well, non-lethally, and she doesn't even have, like, a sling afterwards, but whatever.
No, she's just walking around. We don't know how long it takes, but she's absolutely fine.
Yeah.
I mean, when I saw that was really disturbing, kind of cold. He shoots her.
Yep.
He shoots Rocky. He doesn't just shoot Rocky. He's Rocky, as far as I'm concerned.
Like broccoli.
So he shoots Spocky, and he empties his gun into him. And it's always about how they talk about even, you know, you didn't shoot him like a lawman.
No.
You know, you blew up at him. He just shoots him over and over until the gun's empty. And then he just walks past her.
Yep.
He doesn't check to see if she's alive. He doesn't pick her up. He just... doesn't break stride.
He says, get a doctor, she'll live. Like, he knows. He's apparently that good a gunman that he knows. Like, I you know. And here's the other thing. I think that this is actually what I liked about him walking away, is his feeling is, there's no way she's going to forgive me for that. I just shot her, and I killed her brother.
Just killed her brother.
So that's the end of that.
And as he says of her, he says, she can't forgive me. You got to be big to forgive.
And
the fact at the I know at the end there's the thing, he's riding out of town
on his buckboard,
not into a sunset, but that you know there's one just around the corner.
He's riding into the gray.
She, she goes running after him.
Yeah.
Not yelling, you know, yelling both Griff and Mr. Bunnell.
Yeah.
And climbs onto the wagon and they ride out of town. And on the one hand, that seems like a subservient thing.
Yep.
It's like, oh, look at that. She's turned into, you know, Kate from Taming of the Shrew. She's... On the other hand, he just said that I'm not that big. You have to be big to forgive, and I'm not that big. And she forgives him. He has just acknowledged that she is a stronger person than he is, that she is a better person than he is. Well, so that's a little undercut. I mean, again, it's 1957. They've got to have her be a little girly. They've got to have her go running after, you know, Shane!
Mother wants you, wants you. Yeah, and here's my question. Is she a better person than he is?
I don't know. Well, she's a better actor, but she's a... She is a very
strong... Actors of the old west.
She's a very strong person. She took, you know, she's out on the frontier, basically definition of chaos, and has forged the place into a place of order. She's made a lot of money. She's queen, basically. She has 40 men doing her bidding, sitting at her table like they're her children. And there is never a sense that anyone but her is in charge. Even when she's wearing the ball gown and sitting there like, you know, fiddle-dee-dee, I'm a Southern Belle or some such.
Western Belle.
She is in charge, and there is no one to challenge that. The closest you get is the sheriff, who just gets mad because she doesn't love him.
Yeah, and then takes matters into his own hands twice, and she's like...
Screws it up both times.
Yeah, she's like, didn't I tell you to leave?
Yeah.
My feeling is that if you're looking at who's a better person, I'm still going to go with Griff, because Griff, while he doesn't want to do certain things because it's like, I know what the results are going to be, finally, when pushed into that corner, he's like, this is what has to happen, I'm going to do it. And even though I know it's going to, in a way, poorly impact me, maybe people are going to think less of me because I shot her brother. She's going to not like me because I shot her brother, and I actually shot her. That's what needed to happen, and I went ahead and did it. But all the times that Brocky went nuts, shot up the town, got drunk, got people pregnant, whatever, all she did was like, Brocky, no, don't do that. That's bad. You shouldn't
do that. But you do have to remember something else about Griff. He's a professional killer. This guy is not... He wasn't a lawman. He was a gunfighter, meaning he fought for money. He would kill people for reward. That's why he's bringing the guy in with the warrant, because there's money in it.
Well, but he also is going after he's people that are murderers.
He doesn't care.
We don't know that. We don't know who else he's brought in. We only have one example, and that person killed a deputy and robbed the mail train.
When his old friend John, the blind marshal, is asking for his help, he keeps saying, it's not my fight. Yeah. I'm not going to do it. When Brocky's tearing the place up, he says, it's not my fight. I'm not going to do it. He finally does it because his friend, the blacksmith, goes running out. And even when you watch Brocky get sprung the first time, he and Wes are just standing there laughing. They think it's funny. They saw this. They know this guy murdered their friend. They know it was murder. And they think it's funny that he's walking, and they don't want to do anything about it.
I'm still going to give them points because she's hired the murderer, and she knows it. So we should probably add that to our wrap up because that's going to determine whether we like the film or not.
The finish.
So Max,
yeah,
had you ever heard of 40 Guns?
Nope.
How about Samuel? Like I say, you said you saw a Samuel Fuller.
I know one Samuel Fuller movie, and I didn't know he did westerns. I thought he just did war movies.
So we had to go looking for this one.
This is a hard one to find.
Thanks, Patton.
Yeah.
Well, what do we care? He's not going to show up. Is he? No. What did you think?
Well, I know you don't like westerns. I do. I enjoy it. There's a bunch of them I enjoy. And I thought this was decent. I also thought this was surprising. It wasn't that cliche. It was some, but it went in directions I didn't think. I'm sitting there going, oh, Chico's going to die. No, he's not.
No.
He's going to end up as the marshal.
I had the same note.
And yeah, and like, oh, wow, the gunsmith is a woman and no one does anything weird. No one's weird about it. Barbara Stanwyck isn't a villain. She's, you know, morally questionable.
Yeah.
But she's not a bloodthirsty. She's not Ike Clanton.
No.
And I think it's interesting. I do think the acting is, except for Barbara Stanwyck, who's amazing, the acting is par. You know, it's adequate. But nothing to write home about. This is not a John Ford Western where you've got people like Henry Fonda or Jimmy Stewart or even John Wayne, who, when he isn't playing a Mongol, does a pretty good job.
See our entire episode on The Conqueror.
The Conqueror. Yes. You speak the truth, my mother.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the act... I liked it. I think it's interesting. I'm glad I saw it. And if you are into Westerns, I would recommend this. It's kind of non-standard.
Mm.
What about you? You had never seen this or heard of it either, right?
Or even Samuel Fuller. Never heard of him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a good story in there. I just don't think it had been properly fleshed out. There are some scenes that work very well. There's a sort of an ambush scene towards the end with this character named Charlie Savage. And... Mm. It is very tense because it seems to be set up really well, and we keep waiting for Griff to go, oh yeah, I know what's happening, and he doesn't. Mm-hmm. And there's only one character that knows what's going on, and that's the cat. And if he had just listened to the cat, he would know there was
always listen to the cat. I did like poor. They've got this poor patsy named Wiley.
Yeah.
And he's supposed to be pretending to be Savage. You're like, come get me. And the poor guy, he's standing there, and all I could think is line. Plus, it's like he forgets what he's supposed to say. He's so scared.
Yeah.
And I got to say, we diss on the acting in this, and Wiley is in one scene.
Yeah.
He does a really good job of conveying someone who's just scared out of his mind.
I think he peed.
I'm almost sure he did. And what does he do at the end? He faints.
Yeah. Well, I would too.
He literally keels over.
But I think there's a lot of scattershot ideas that don't feel fully ironed out to me. I get the tornado, but it just seems sort of like, you know, here we are in the old, holy crap, what's that? Like, it just feels very out of, like, oh yeah, tornadoes. I gotta say, though, the special effects were really good. It looked very...
The tornado was very convincing.
And I don't know what they had powering the giant fans, but they were obviously blowing a lot of dust.
I think that's where the budget went, was the big fan.
Yeah. But it just felt like I didn't feel the characters' motivations were as clear as they could be. And there was definitely potential for some really interesting, more nuanced characters in there. Like, I was able to add this backstory for Brocky that is hinted at, but it's like, if they had been like another draft or something, I don't know. I'd say if you like Westerns, there's lots better Westerns out there, quite honestly. The star is Barbara Stanwyck. I love the fact that the women in this film are not portrayed as the usual types in Westerns, and especially Barbara Stanwyck.
They're not damsels.
Especially now that I know she did her own thing. Ah, give me that horse, I can do it. Because I bet she spits. I just bet Barbara Stanwyck spits.
Ow, 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 ow,
and
ow.
I bet she's the hard-drinkingest actor on that set. For me, it had potential, but it didn't live up to it. But what does Patton think?
He has a very quick take on this. He says, this is a fantastic Western. Barbara Stanwyck with a whip, basically leading Gene Barry around by the nose. Fantastic Western. Got to see it back in the day with Sam Fuller and Gene Barry talking about Sam Fuller giving him directing tips, acting tips. Be louder. So, boom, I'm in.
I think he means Barry Sullivan, which is not that that's who he saw the film with, but she's leading Barry Sullivan around by the nose, not Gene Barry.
No, he said Gene Barry.
Yeah, but Barry Sullivan is Griff Bunnell.
Yeah, and I don't know. Maybe he got it mixed up.
Yeah, must have, because like, I don't think Barbara Stanwyck really says much of anything to Wes Bunnell.
Nope.
But yeah, well, that was cool.
Yeah.
And we have to thank.
Yes, our listener. Our close personal buddy, best friend in the whole world, who we now live with in our mountaintop secret cabin made of gingerbread, Patton Oswalt. Hey, buddy, thanks.
Hey, we actually got within 20 feet of him once.
We did. Yeah. We did indeed.
Yeah. That ends that series. But we have a poll question that's not done. And Max, if you'd go over that for us and tell us how people could answer that poll question.
I reckon I will. Yep.
I hope next week's not a Western.
Ching. Ching.
Go for your shooting iron, Edmund.
Yep. If you like Westerns, what is your favorite Western? Or do you just dislike the entire genre? And you can answer this by, as Mike foolishly gave away at the beginning, by emailing us at us@maxmikemovies.com, or you can go to our website, maxmikemovies.com, and leave a comment, or you can find us on the Buckface with the
Facebook.
Max Mike Movies.
Facebook.
Spaceship. And you can find us on the podcast app of your choice, of anyone's choice, of all choices. We're out there.
It's the choice of a new generation.
It is. And the old generation. And the generation that never existed.
And a coffee generation.
But that is, as Mike says, the end of this series, because Patton said so. And now we start a brand new series. What's this new series called, Mike?
This new series, it's a new series that's called Didn't Win, Didn't Win, Didn't Win. And it's all about movies that a lot of people, likely us, thought should have won Best Picture, but didn't.
Aren't we timely? Because the Oscars are coming up.
Yeah, to be fair, as we record this, the Oscars is in a few days. And there's a film that a lot of people would like to see win Best Picture, which we're going to, well, probably bet isn't going to.
It's unlikely.
And if that's the case, then...
we talked about...
Yeah, we did. So we're going to be looking at films that we think should have won Best Picture, but didn't for reasons we don't
know. Or other people. Other people are convinced should have won Best Picture.
Yes, some of them might even be you, our listeners and poll question answerers. But the first...
But what are we starting with?
So the first film we're going to look at is... how to put this? It's kind of...
gay.
Yeah, it's kind of gay. and I can say that because Max is Jewish.
Wait, what?
I don't know. We're gonna.
I'm Jewish?
Surprise!
Oh my God! How am I going to explain this to my priest?
We're going to look at 2005's Brokeback Mountain. Now, this film was nominated for...
a happy movie.
What?
A happy movie.
A happy movie. Very happy movie. This movie was nominated for Best Actor, Heath Ledger. Best Supporting Actor, Jake Gyllenhaal. Don't know how that works, but whatever. Best Actress in a Supporting Role, Michelle Williams. Cinematography, Directing, Ang Lee. Best Score, Best Picture, Best Writing Adapted Screenplay. It won Director, Score, and Adapted Screenplay. But Crash... which was nominated for a few awards, meaning Best Picture, Best Editing, Best Writing, Best Supporting Actor, one for Editing, Writing, and Best Picture. Did it deserve it? We're going to guess Max says no.
I'm subtle.
Max and I are going to go up a mountain, and we're going to discuss this like two straight people who have plenty of other things to do than mess about in a tent.
Yep, and... there'll be no sheep anywhere.
No sheep. Yeah, so if you'd like to listen to a sheepless podcast, tune in next week for our sheepless episode on Brokeback Mountain.
This has been a co-production of The Voice of Max and The Movie Wrench.